Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been a wild 72 hours. On Friday, astonishment and a firestorm over tapes of Donald Trump and Billy Bush speaking about women in highly vulgar, demeaning, sexual terms. Trump followed with a midnight apology. For many, it was not enough. Shocked Republicans withdrawing their support. Last night in debate, Trump apologized, said it was locker room talk, and tried to move on. Will American voters, American women, let him? This hour on Point, the Trump bombshell, and what now? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Did you watch the tapes with Billy Bush and Donald Trump? How did you interpret them? Do you see simple locker room banter or something more here? Sexual assault. Emily Bazelon and Mona Charon join us in a moment. And later this hour, we'll talk about whether and how Donald Trump might be replaced at the top of the Republican ticket. And before we should get started, I should just give everyone a heads up. The content of this hour may not be suitable for young listeners. Some of that tape from 2005, Donald Trump during an Access Hollywood. These were outtakes. The video camera was running when they were on the bus getting ready. He was going to appear on the set of Days of Our Lives to tape a segment about a cameo there. He's talking with Billy Bush. There are others in the bus. Billy Bush is laughing in the background here, and he talks about here about how he just pops in a Tic Tac, a breath mint, when he's with a beautiful woman in case he starts kissing her, because he just does it. He just goes for it.
I gotta use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. I don't even wait.
And when you're a star, he says, they just let you do it. You can do anything.
And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the I can do anything.
Look at those legs. All I can see is the legs.
No, it looks good.
Come on, shorty.
Oh, nice legs, huh?
Oof, get out of the way, honey. That's good legs.
You can do anything. Grab them by that. We're bleeping it, but it's a very intimate term for female genitalia. Had he done it? Well, he said in that same conversation, talking about a woman he'd moved on, he said, tried to, again, language we can't use. She was married, but here was Trump.
I moved on her, actually. You know, she was down in Palm Beach. I moved on her, and I failed. I'll admit it.
Whoa.
I did try and her. She was married.
That's huge news, Sarah.
He went hard after her, he said, but then later she had some, she had cosmetic surgery, maybe breast implants from what, again, we have to bleep here the language that he used, but he moved on her hard.
I moved on her like a but I couldn't get there, and she was married. And all of a sudden I see her, she's now got the big phony and everything. She's totally changed her look.
Mark Fisher is with us, senior editor at The Washington Post. The Washington Post has done a lot of groundbreaking reporting on getting all this out in public. Interesting timing, October surprise timing. That's for sure. He's written about the Trump bombshells. Most recent story, more Trump tapes surface with crude sex remarks about some of his conversations with Howard Stern. You can link to all that at our website, onpointradio.org. Mark Fisher in Washington, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
You co-authored with Michael Cranish the big book Trump Revealed, An American Journey of Ambition, Ego, Money, and Power. Now we've got these stories coming out. Here we are, early October. Where did the first round of reports come from? How did the Access Hollywood tape come to the attention of the Washington Post?
Well, it was a call to my colleague David Farenthold from a source who had the material, and it was Friday morning around 11 o'clock when he got the call, and the story was posted about 4 or 5 hours later after he was able to authenticate it. So it was not something that we were seeking, not something we'd known the existence of. Sort of classic case of the material coming in over the transom.
Is there more in what you've been given, or are you waiting? Does there appear to be more coming?
No, we're not. I mean, we're not in the business of holding anything back if it's authentic and newsworthy. So if you know what you see is what we have. In the case of the Howard Stern tapes, that's something that the reporters over at BuzzFeed who went over to CNN, they got those transcripts of Howard Stern, those recordings of Howard Stern's show with Donald Trump on it. We'd gotten a previous batch of that earlier. What's happening is that people who have these recordings, whether they're producers, whether they're other staffers at these shows, are digging back into their archives or looking through their memory banks and saying, what was Donald Trump ever on? And we should go back and listen to that. And then they're forwarding that material to us.
Mike Pence responding to the video. Of course, Donald Trump's running mate saying as a husband and father, I was offended by the words and actions described by Donald Trump in the video. He went on to say, I don't condone these remarks. I cannot defend them. And he kind of stepped out of campaigning for the weekend. Paul Ryan dropping Donald Trump off of an appearance in Wisconsin, but not dropping Donald Trump. Many other Republicans have. Midnight on Saturday, Trump apologized for the comments. This was released on a video apology, I guess, released on Facebook.
I've never said I'm a perfect person, nor pretended to be someone that I'm not. I've said and done things I regret, and the words released today on this more than a decade-old video are one of them. Anyone who knows me knows these words don't reflect who I am. I said it, I was wrong, and I apologize.
Don't reflect who I am, maybe, but Mark Fisher and The Washington Post have more. Looking back, old conversations, Donald Trump was a frequent guest of Howard Stern when he was on broadcast radio. I guess he was still on at that time. Here's a 2002 interview where they're talking about women and age and who Donald Trump would go for.
The last couple of years, I go out with somebody, and she's like 21, and she's talking about, what are you doing? And she's studying algebra. And
so what?
And it's like, it was always embarrassing for me to walk in. It's too young. 30 is like a perfect age.
Absolutely. She has enough life experience.
Until she's 35.
too much life experience.
Right. What is it at 35, Howard? It's called checkout time.
And at 35 is checkout time. That's when a woman is too old. And talking about his own daughter, Ivanka, then in her early 20s.
By the way, your daughter.
She's beautiful.
Can I say this? A piece of.
Yeah.
She's boy, I would back up the Brinks truck. Introduce
me to her.
Yeah,
who's going to win that prize?
You are the last person.
Okay, Mark Fisher's with us from the Washington Post. Mark, I mean, this was Donald Trump voluntarily on the air in 2002. It's a while back. It's the Howard Stern show. It was already in public. So what makes it news exactly now?
Well, it's interesting. It seems to be having a big effect because it's a recording, and we're seeing this over and over again in this campaign where news reports and our book that had extensive details about
Trump revealed
comments.
Yep.
Yeah, these kinds of comments by Donald Trump, that's been out there for weeks, if not months, and it had minimal effect. But when the recording comes out, that changes the whole landscape. And the kind of reaction, the firestorm we've seen over the last 72 hours, is really something so qualitatively different from the reaction to a news report that just says Donald Trump said these nasty things. And so this is material that's been out there for years. Anyone who's watched Donald Trump at all closely knows that he has this kind of coarse language and attitudes toward women, and yet it's hearing it and seeing it that makes the huge emotional difference that causes the kind of political sea change we've seen in recent hours.
We'll see how far that change goes. He talked about, of course, he's very involved in the Miss Universe contest. That's his. And he talked with Stern about how he would go backstage where the contestants were in various stages of undress or not dressed, and here's Trump with Stern.
I'll tell you the funniest is that I'll go backstage before a show.
Yes.
And everyone's getting dressed and ready and everything else. And, no men are anywhere. And I'm allowed to go in because I'm the owner of the pageant, and therefore I'm inspecting it. I'm inspecting.
Right,
I want to make sure that
you're like
everything
a doctor.
Is good.
You're there.
Yeah, the dress. Is everyone okay? They're standing there with no clothes. Is everybody okay? And you see these incredible-looking women. And so I sort of get away with things like that.
I get away with things like that. Mark Fisher, at that time, Donald Trump was no kind of public figure. So what standard should be held up to a person who later becomes a political figure but was not at that time?
Well, standards are exactly the right question to ask about this whole campaign and why Donald Trump gets away with things that other people don't. Any politician who'd done any one of the dozens of things that we've seen Donald Trump getting away with would have been toast. Their career would have been over with one such gaffe. But Donald Trump has, up until now, been held to a different standard, a standard perhaps of a celebrity. And we're very forgiving as Americans about celebrities' misdeeds, whether they're sports figures, Hollywood figures, or a wealthy playboy like Donald Trump pretends to be. So he has had the advantage of getting away with things that his competitors simply can't get away with. And now that he's the nominee, and now that we're just a few weeks from the election, perhaps that standard is starting to shift. Now, of course, he is still dismissing the idea that he should be held to that standard. We saw in the debate last night, he was extremely dismissive of the idea that anyone would take this as anything other than locker room banter. But when I asked him about this kind of material weeks ago, or a couple of months ago, when we were having an interview for our book, he gets this kind of impish smile on his face when you ask him about these bad boy kinds of comments. And he doesn't, he gets a little cagey in his language. He'll say, I don't want to confirm or deny. But in that impish smile and the kind of nod that he does when you're sitting in front of him, he seems quite proud of this kind of behavior.
In debate last night, he said Bill Clinton has acted on sexual impulses. He's only talked about it. Is that true as far as you know?
Well, there's certainly allegations to the contrary. There's a case involving a woman who he was in business with. They had an encounter at Mar-a-Lago, his estate in Florida, that she says involved sexual assault. There are other instances of women, particularly from the Miss Universe pageant, saying that he did inappropriate things as the owner coming backstage, as he said in that clip you played. And so there are indications, allegations, that he has gone beyond words, but you know, none of those have been adjudicated in a court of law, and he denies it.
Is there more to come? I mean, the Apprentice tapes and, you know, sort of off camera and more. There's so much out there. If this is common, will we see more?
Undoubtedly, we will see more. I've been talking with people who have other recordings or other material that they think they can get, that they're not sure. You know, this is 3 or 4 decades worth of material from a guy who lived through the media through his entire career. He built his business as someone who was presenting this image to the world of this playboy billionaire who could do anything he wanted, say anything he wanted. And so saying risque things, being provocative, being coarse, was part of the personality he built. So there's a wealth of material out there, and which material will get to which reporter and when and whether that's going to somehow change the public's perception is unclear.
All gushing into October. Mark Fisher, co-author of Trump Revealed, An American Journey of Ambition, Ego, Money, and Power with The Washington Post. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Good to be with you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about women and Donald Trump. Again, after the weekend bombshells, locker room talk, sexual assault, the vulgar, the degrading, and the election in 2016. You heard all that tape of talking about grabbing women by their genitals. He's a star. He can do whatever you want. He sees them. He just goes and kisses them. And then they're pulling up on the lot there in California with Access Hollywood with Billy Bush to the actress that they've been talking about through the window. As they approached her, Billy Bush steps off the bus and says to her, how about a hug for Donald?
How about a little hug for Donald? He just got off the bus.
Okay, absolutely. Melania said this was okay.
Melania said it was okay. Newlywed, she was pregnant. And, of course, then the tapes have gone on. Here's more with Howard Stern talking about what he would do if one of his beauty pageant contestants asked him to sleep with her. Here's an excerpt.
One of them comes up to you and says, Mr. Trump, you're a very sexy man.
You're a beautiful man. You have fantastic hair.
Well, you're a powerful man. Right? Right? You're
right.
A powerful man.
Right.
I want to sleep with you. Now, you're not the type that would say no.
I don't want to hurt their feelings.
Right. No. Right. But, I mean, you see a beautiful woman. You want to have that. You're a guy who likes to have everything. Right?
Well, couldn't that be construed, however, as
conflict?
Yes.
Well, I don't see it as a conflict.
It could be a conflict of interest, but, you know, it's the kind of thing you worry about later.
Worry about that later. That was 2005. Now it's 2016. Later. And it is, or has been over this weekend anyway, a problem, a scandal anyway. Donald Trump apologized and said, essentially in a debate last night, let's move on. Americans, American women, considering whether to do that. I want to look at this situation. Mona Charon joins us right now from Falls Church, Virginia, syndicated columnist, political analyst. Her October 8th column for the National Review is titled Who Trump Is, a conservative voice, thoughtful voice. Mona Charon, welcome back to On Point. Thank you for being here today.
My pleasure.
Emily Bazelon is with us from New Haven, Connecticut, staff writer for The New York Times, co-host of the Slate Political Gabfest, often writes about justice and sexually assault. Emily Bazelon, welcome back to On Point to you as well. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Mona, locker room talk. He's embarrassed. He's apologized. But let's move on, Donald Trump said last night. Are you with that?
I do not really understand the dynamics of this whole thing. I do not understand why this particular tape revealing this particular kind of Donald Trump gross behavior has caused the bottom to fall out for him, whereas so many other things that he has said and done over the course of a lifetime, really, but have certainly come to public attention in the last 16 months, have not caused this kind of a reaction. So it's a little mystifying to me how this is suddenly the worst possible thing. It is despicable, but so was encouraging violence at his rallies, and so was making comments about women's menstrual cycles, and mm-hmm. so was calling women by terrible names, and on and on and on, encouraging conspiracy theories, and so forth. So having said that, I'm just going to put that out there. I don't understand why this is the straw that seems to be breaking the camel's back. Having said that, I have to say that in a weird way, the Democrats are in no position to be claiming the moral high ground. Specifically, Hillary Clinton is not in a position to be claiming the moral high ground because she did justify or explain away or indeed enable this very similar behavior on the part of Bill Clinton. And for her to now say we're going high while they're going low, sort of trademarked going low, I'm sorry to report. The Clintons did.
Donald Trump looked to exploit that dynamic, certainly. He sat down with a number of women yesterday, including Juanita Broderick, who claimed in 1999 that Bill Clinton had raped her in 1978. That lawsuit was dismissed in 2001. Criminal charges were never filed. But she later said Hillary Clinton had threatened her, referring just to a moment at a campaign fundraiser where Hillary allegedly thanked her for everything you're doing in Bill's campaign. Here was Broderick at this press conference that Donald Trump gave yesterday with her and three others.
Actions speak louder than words. Mr. Trump may have said some bad words, but Bill Clinton raped me and Hillary Clinton threatened me. I don't think there's any comparison.
Emily Bazelon, Donald Trump's words on tape in their own right, and then the comparison being made to Bill Clinton, Mona Charon says, not a whole lot of leg to stand on when you put it all out there.
Well, if we're going to go down this road, I suppose we should also bring in the fact that there are women who've also accused Donald Trump of sexual assault. To add that to this very ugly mix. I mean, look, I just feel heartsick about how low this conversation has gone. The idea that we're having some kind of election referendum over who the real or the worst rapist is instead of talking about the country's future. And there's also just something to me deeply sad about having the first woman run for the presidency and being flayed for her husband's sins of many years ago. Bill Clinton was a popular president two times around. And now, because someone like Donald Trump, who has such a misogynist record in his utter contempt for women, because he's running for office, he's bringing back up all of this baggage that Hillary Clinton may have a complicated relationship to, but the notion that she's the one who's going to pay the price for it and be held accountable in a race with Donald Trump, there's just a really deep irony there.
Mona, of course, Bill Clinton famously sat down with Hillary Clinton way back when he was running the first time for the White House on 60 Minutes and talked about the Jennifer Flowers allegations that were out there at that time. And it wasn't easy. It wasn't exactly pretty, but he made it through the eye of that needle. Do you think Donald Trump will survive this round of October surprises?
Well, it's a measure of the degradation of our public discourse that the bar is set incredibly low. There was a time. Look, you know, Richard Nixon felt that first of all, he didn't burn the tapes, and he felt that that he had to resign. He lost the support of his party mm-hmm. because he was caught doing things that were illegal or arguably illegal and were certainly unethical and abuses of power. We are now, thanks to the Clintons, partly, and it's not entirely them, but it's the whole culture has degenerated, but they helped give it a big push in the 90s by saying, well, it really doesn't matter whether your personal conduct is utterly unethical and skirts the law in a million ways and you defy subpoenas and show disrespect for the law. It only matters that you have the right positions, you know, substantively on abortion or other liberal wish list matters. That was the line. It was, oh, it's just sex. It doesn't matter. Your personal conduct is irrelevant. We don't want to hear about it. And now, look, as you know, I am no fan of Donald Trump. I've been a vociferous critic from the very beginning. But I will give him credit for this. He's helped the Democratic Party rediscover the importance of ethics in government and sexual morality.
Do you think the Republican Party should stick with him? The latest I'm seeing here is that Paul Ryan is saying, Speaker of the House, of course, Republican, that he's not rescinding his endorsement of Trump for now, but he won't campaign with him either. He's going to focus on keeping the House majority. Should the Republican leadership stick with, and Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan have so far, stick with Donald Trump, Mona?
In my opinion, no. That there should have been a concerted effort from the very beginning to protect the integrity of the Republican Party against the spreading stain of Trump and Trumpism. But unfortunately, that has not happened. I think it's unrealistic to expect it to happen a month before the election. Many places have early voting. Terrible idea, by the way. But a lot of people are already casting their ballots. How would that work if he were to be withdrawn at this late stage? It's, I'm afraid, too late.
Let's go to our callers, Dolores in Pennsylvania, Waterford, Pennsylvania. Dolores, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm Mona. I find this man to be one of the most repulsive individuals standing. I think he has the mentality of an egotistical high school jock. You know, anybody with a mother, with a grandmother, aunt, niece, etc., should be completely turned off by this individual. And the fact that he claims this is locker room banter, he was 59 years old when he made these comments. I seriously doubt if you have guys like Steph Curry or Big Poppy, Larry Fitzgerald, the Manning brothers, having these type of conversations in the locker room. You know, to me, as far as I'm concerned, he is a habitual liar. He's an opportunist. And he promotes and elevates the agenda of the white supremacists. I mean, I want to see what's locked behind the doors of The Apprentice. I want some of these people to come out and say what happened on the production room of The Apprentice.
And who knows? We may. Mark Burnett owns that. We don't know if that will come out. I mean, Emily, of course there is locker room talk in this world. But to my ear and my experience, it's a little different when you talk about, you know, laying hands on and like grabbing women by the genitals who express no interest in that. Even among guys, that's not that, in my experience, that is not a common kind of conversation at all.
Right. And it's important for men like you to speak up and say that. I have two teenage boys. They're 16 and 13. And the idea that they would think this is normal, that talking about, as you said, laying hands on women, in effect, sexually assaulting them, is an acceptable thing to brag about, that just sickens me. And the idea that we could have a president who would condone and then brush off that kind of behavior, because, you know, let's be clear, we're talking about things that Donald Trump made clear that he did as well as that he was talking about. He can try and deny that now, but there's evidence from women who've come forward and talked about things like forcible kissing. And again, we're just talking about someone who does not fundamentally see as fully human whole groups of people, women, disabled people. We've seen him talk about African Americans, Latinos in the same manner. It's just fundamentally disturbing.
Is there a difference between Donald Trump now and Bill Clinton when he was wriggling away from the Jennifer Flowers situation in his run for the White House? Is there a difference after Monica Lewinsky and everything else? If there was some, you know, desire to draw a line between private and public in those days, can that same line be drawn here, Emily?
You know, it's hard to go back and re-excavate that era. I think that if Bill Clinton had done some of the things he did in the 90s now, we would be judging him more harshly for it, and we should. But we don't know. It's hard to recover all of those facts now. Some of these allegations were never proven. Maybe they're credible and maybe they're not. It's impossible to rediscover that. So, look, do I think that Bill Clinton was, you know, behaved well? No, I don't. But the idea that that means we should excuse Trump's behavior now, that doesn't make any sense to
Mona?
I just, look, I don't disagree with a lot of what's been said. And so I'll just clarify about that. On the other hand, I have to remind people that there was an unbelievable double standard in this country, and especially in Washington and among the opinion elite, about bad sexual behavior depending upon the party identification of the person. So,
well, wait a minute. You mean you're saying Democrats could fool around and Republicans couldn't? Seriously?
Let me finish. If you look at even taking as read, even taking as true everything that was alleged against Clarence Thomas in the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas imbroglio, he didn't ever do anything approaching anything as bad as what Bill Clinton is known to have done. Okay,
and he's on the Supreme Court.
A very different standard.
He's on the Supreme Court, and come on, you can't say
Democrats
there's a blanket difference.
Anita Hill in those hearings,
and Bob Packwood. Was drummed out of office, Senator Bob Packwood. He squeezed a couple of women's shoulders. There is a very different standard, and it has happened again and again. I think people have to be consistent. If it's bad behavior, it has to be bad behavior.
We hear it. You assert it, and we're talking about Clinton as well here, but I do not recall such a wide canyon in the yardstick put up against people as you're describing there. Maida in New Orleans. Maida, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I am the mother of a son who is in his 40s and has a daughter, my granddaughter, and I cannot in any way, shape, or form condone anything that Donald Trump has said or done since he's decided to run for president. Well, I didn't like him before, but now that all this has come out, do you want this man to be the role model for your sons? How would Donald Trump react if his daughter came to him and said that some guy had treated her the way he treats women?
Does Bill Clinton's behavior factor into how you assess Donald Trump?
Behavior has nothing to do with this election.
Really? He was president. Well, that's true, but if we're looking at standards,
he's not president now. He's not running for president. His wife
would not have.
She hasn't done anything wrong
for Hillary.
Yeah,
but for her.
I think that is
he got away with it.
Well, I don't know about that. That's giving her a lot of credit.
We don't have evidence of that. We just don't. We have one allegation from Juanita Broderick that Hillary came up to her and said thank you at a campaign event. There's no indication that we know that Hillary Clinton had any idea of the allegations Juanita Broderick was making at that point. And so the notion that it is Hillary Clinton who's going
to
pay the price for this man's wrongdoings, there is just something deeply troubling about that from the point of view of any feminist.
I'm referring to Hillary Clinton's decision when the Monica Lewinsky thing happened to go on television and blame it all on a vast right-wing conspiracy, claim that it was false and that it would be proven to be false, okay? And that was critical in his survival as a political as president, because if she had not stood by him, many Democrats might have abandoned him.
Do you know that she knew otherwise at the time, Mona?
Were critical. Sorry?
Do you know that she knew otherwise at the time?
Well, if you look at her lawyerly way of expressing herself on the Today Show when she said these allegations are not true, and then they pressed her and she said, well, they will not be proven to be true, which sounds like every villain in a TV drama when the police surround him and say, you know, we have you, and he says, well, you'll never prove that in court. You know, that's the way guilty people talk.
And now we're talking about Donald Trump, here talking about his own daughter with Howard Stern, whether or not Ivanka had breast implants.
Why, did she look a little more fat?
She looks more voluptuous than ever.
No, she didn't get them.
And she got thinner.
She's actually always been very voluptuous. She's tall. She's almost 6 feet tall.
She is some catch.
She's been, she's an amazing beauty.
Donald Trump talking about Ivanka there with Howard Stern, and much more to come, we are warned. on the tape front. We're looking this hour at women and Donald Trump again after the weekend bombshells. Mona Charon is with us. Emily Bazelon is here. You can join us as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Goldman Sachs. Get insights from some of the world's leading thinkers on markets, industries, and the global economy in the firm's podcast, Exchanges at Goldman Sachs. You'll hear discussions on topics with far-reaching implications like climate change, autonomous driving, the future of China's economic growth, plus much more. That's Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play, and at gs.com/podcast.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about women and Donald Trump after the weekend bombshells, locker room talk or sexual assault, to call it what you will, vulgar, degrading. Looking at all that and the election with Emily Bazelon, staff writer for the New York Times, co-host of the Slate Political Gabfest, now at Yale Law School. Mona Charon is with us. She's a syndicated columnist, political analyst. You can link to her at her latest piece on Donald Trump at our website, onpointradio.com. .org. We're going to turn in just a few minutes here to look at the he should drop out scenario, and if that was pushed forward, could that actually happen, and how would that actually happen? We'll see where the fever for that lies as we talk today on Monday after this weekend. Certainly in the debate last night, there it was, Anderson Cooper pressing Donald Trump a little on the locker room talk issue, and that's putting it mildly.
Are you saying that what you said on that bus 11 years ago, that you did not actually kiss women without consent or grope women without consent?
I have great respect for women. Nobody has more respect for women than I do.
So for the record, you're saying you never did that.
I said things that, frankly, you hear these things I said. And I was embarrassed by it, but I have tremendous respect for women.
Have you ever done those things?
And women have respect for me. And I will tell you, no, I have not.
Hillary Clinton on that same stage saying you can draw your own conclusions.
Everyone can draw their own conclusions at this point about whether or not the man in the video or the man on the stage respects women. But he never apologizes for anything to anyone.
Let's go to our callers. Amelia in Charleston, South Carolina. You're on, Amelia. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to discuss what Donald Trump said about the video that came out and how he acted to that in the debate. He keeps mentioning that it's all talk and that actions speak louder than words, so I just wanted to outline his actions for the last couple of weeks. He tweeted about Alicia Machado, pointing out that there was a sex tape of her on Twitter.
Which there wasn't exactly. It was a reality TV show in Spain with a little murky stuff in the background. It makes it sound like this was Paris Hilton. It wasn't.
Right, but these are his actions. This is what he's advocating, that he's acting.
Okay.
And this is very recent. This is last week.
Tweeting, is that a crime?
I'm sorry?
Is tweeting a crime?
It's not, but, I mean, if he's willing to say he respects women, I don't think he should be tweeting things like these about women.
Mm. Yeah.
These are his actions speaking for him.
I appreciate your call, Amelia. Let me get Jackie in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Jackie, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to make a comment because I feel like there hasn't been a lot of distance placed between, Trump and his words, so to speak. Whereas, his actions are speaking louder than his words. And I thought it was a very specifically misogynistic action to bring in the women who brought allegations against Hillary's husband to the debate last night. I thought that was...
They were in the front row. Why is it misogynistic? He says they were abused by Bill Clinton, and here they are. Why is that misogynistic?
Well, this is the thing. For Hillary to be taken to task again and again and again and again during this whole national conversation we're having for the actions that her husband took, whether politically or personally when he was president of the United States, is not allowing Hillary Clinton to be a presidential candidate that is to be taken seriously as an individual. And I find that, it cheapened the debate to just a cheap reality TV show, which is what Donald Trump kind of is.
Well, I know that feeling. It certainly felt cheap in many ways, but he says she was an enabler, and therefore, you know, their stories are, there's a justified link.
I don't believe that that's true. I believe that's a way of just kind of covering up what Hillary Clinton, it is a diversion tactic, as she said in the debate. It is a way of, and it's a common diversion tactic, sadly. It's a way that men can, you know, accuse women. It's the same thing as, you know, she had it coming, her skirt was short. Mm. You know, the actions that, you know, that her husband took when he was president of the United States are not relevant to this debate and are not relevant to her capabilities as president of the United States.
Jackie, we've got it. Kendall in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Kendall, you're on.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Ms. Bazelton, I've been a big fan for a long time.
Great.
As a parent of a teenage son, this election has shocked the conscience. Donald Trump is a total narcissist who sees women as property, nothing more than property. Bill Clinton is not running for president. Maybe it was Hillary's plan to stay with him because she couldn't be president back when he was president. And maybe she stayed with him for this plan. And I'm with her. I was with Bernie, but now I'm with Hillary.
How are you talking about this with your sons, Kendall?
Well, you know, we watch it. We've watched everything we watch. We read Mark Amore's article together. We watch SNL together. And, you know, it's amazing. He's not a misogynist. He's an awesome kid who loves women. He loves gay people. He loves straight people. He loves LGBTQ people. And we're not even spending money in North Carolina because of what their governor.
And you're talking about your son there, not Donald Trump. We've got it. And one more, and I want to bring it back to Mona and Emily. Peter in Hinesburg, Vermont. Peter, you're on.
Yes, hi, Tom. Thanks very much for taking my call.
Yes.
What I would like to say is that I'm a man, okay? And I've been in the sleaziest of worst locker rooms. And there's a difference between saying a woman is beautiful and you'd like to have sex with her or she has nice breasts or something like that and saying I would force myself upon her or I would grope her or grab her by her female genitals. You know, this is outrageous. As far as should he drop out of the race, yes, I think so. I mean, I think America and the American people should be ashamed of themselves for letting it get this far. You know, this is awful.
Peter, I appreciate your call, and I got to say that lines up pretty well with my locker room experience. Yeah, there's a lot of talk, but talking about actually assaulting a woman or grabbing her genitals against her will, that seems like a different thing. Mona, is it disqualifying in 2016? We know the history. You've pointed it out. So has Donald Trump. So have our callers. But here we are. Here we are now, and knowing what we know, there's a choice to be made.
Of course, it's disqualifying, along with so many other things that Donald Trump has already done earlier in this cycle. Yes, he is a reprehensible vulgarian. He thinks he can get away with things because he's a spoiled brat who's rich and who has never. No one ever says no to him. So all of that is true. But I would just urge people to remember that some of this spreading stain began in the Clinton years when they refused to have the good grace to say, you know what Bill Clinton did, taking advantage of an intern in the Oval Office, for heaven's sake, is also crossing a line. And their attitude was, we're not going to admit anything. We're not going to show contrition. We're not going to resign. We're going to just bull our way through. We're going to win. And that is part of our problem. We began this degradation path in the 90s.
Mona Charon, syndicated columnist, political analyst with us today from Falls Church, Virginia. Thank you for joining us, Mona.
My pleasure.
Emily, last word goes to you. How should we take this on board politically, culturally, socially?
Well, I think the question is, where do we go from here? I mean, I think what Mona is saying about the 90s and Bill Clinton's actions then, that makes a lot of sense. But now we're in 2016. We have this particular choice. Bill Clinton is not running for office. We have Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. And that question for the country is, what kind of character do we want in our president? And can we tolerate someone who speaks of and treats whole groups of people with so little respect and understanding?
You follow legal issues. Did you hear sexual assault described in these tapes or not?
Yes, I think grabbing women by their genitals and forcibly kissing them, those are forms of sexual assault, as Rudy Giuliani, one of Trump's biggest supporters, admitted on television this weekend.
Wow, can you believe we're here, Emily?
No, I can't believe we're here. I don't know how we got here, and we need to get out of here.
I thought that was just really depressing last night. Depressing weekend. We need to get out of here. I agree with that. Emily Bazelon, staff writer for The New York Times, co-host of the Slate Political Gabfest, now at Yale Law School, joining us today from New Haven, Connecticut. Emily, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I want to look at this issue of whether or not Trump could, might, will drop out. There was a lot of fever about that over the weekend. It's not as simple as it sounds. Well, dropping out is one thing, or be replaced or be pushed out. All of that was a hot talk over this weekend after the tapes came out. Matt Visor has been looking at what that would mean, what that would take. He's Deputy Washington Bureau Chief for the Boston Globe, writing about options that the GOP has now. You can link to his reporting at our website, onpointradio.org. He joins us from St. Louis. Matt Visor, thank you very much for being here.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
If the GOP wanted to do it, and we're not seeing this right now, Paul Ryan saying today that he's not rescinding his Donald Trump endorsement in spite of all of this, won't campaign for him, but he's not ready to pull the plug. But if they wanted to, and we heard a lot of talk about that over the weekend, could they? And if they, and how?
So there are possibilities to do it. It's been described as sort of a triple bank shot. I mean, it's unrealistic and difficult to do, but it is possible. And there's sort of two different scenarios. One where Trump himself decides to drop out, to give up the nomination, and the party could renominate someone else. That is very difficult given that ballots have already been printed. Voting in some states has already started, and some votes have been cast. So there's a lot of legalities that are involved in that scenario. The other scenario would be for the party to reconvene and to sort of try and take the nomination away from Trump, to give it to somebody else. That scenario is also very difficult to do. It would potentially require the RNC changing the rules that it's governed by.
What do the rules say now, Matt?
So the rules say that the RNC is empowered to fill vacancies should they occur by reason of death, declination, or otherwise of the Republican candidate.
Declination as in illness, I guess.
Right. So Trump is neither ill nor dead. So the key phrase there is otherwise, that they would interpret this word otherwise to suggest that they have leeway to make a different choice, that he's become so bad for the party that they are going to abandon him. So that's the word that they would use to try and change the rule.
Let's say they tried to do that. Let's say they just did it, and just hold it there for a second. They did it. Then what happens? I mean, does somebody have to sign off on that? Is it just, Reince Priebus? Who says, here's the new candidate for president of the United States? Who affirms that person?
It would be the committee. It would be the electors of the RNC committee members. And one reason why this is so unlikely is that Reince Priebus is sort of sticking by Trump and giving no indication that he would, put his weight behind doing this. But there's 168 committee members of the RNC that represent different state delegations. So it would require them deciding and taking votes, that some of which would require two-thirds majority. So you'd have to have an overwhelming number of the committee members of the RNC to make this decision that they're going to take the nomination away from Trump or deem him ill-fitted at this point. And even convening requires, 10 days notice, and, we're only 29 days out from the election at this point. So again, it's a very unlikely scenario, but that's the kind of gravity that the party is in, that people are looking at this and talking about it.
Looking less likely today maybe than it did when things were really tippy over the weekend. But let's say that they tried it. Let's say there's more tapes that come out. I mean, we're told there may very well be more. And if the swell rises again and they would take this action, Donald Trump is well known for being litigious, for using lawsuits to come back at people who move on him. Could this be tied up in the courts, even on election day? What kind of tangle could we get into here?
I mean, yeah, you're entering sort of unprecedented territory, and there could be court actions and things like that. But, you know, again, I mean, the easier scenario probably for the party and the direction it seemed to be heading in before the debate was trying to force Trump to drop out. If Mike Pence left the ticket, if it just became untenable for Trump to continue. But he's showing no signs of doing any of that, you know. So he is dug in, and the party would really have to go to extraordinary measures to change course at this point. But it could result in some litigation and some decisions that sort of, get us into territory that we've never been in our country's politics.
Well, is that true? Never? What about history here? Have there never been such, late switcheroos in who's running for president due to illness, death, or otherwise?
There have been due to illness or death, but there's never been a case where the party has sort of nominated somebody for president and then decided, 2 months later to change its mind. So that is the unprecedented aspect. There have been instances where people have died or a vice presidential nominee, Senator Eggleston, where they changed course that way, but never for the top of the ticket has there been this kind of an instance. Where a living candidate, they tried to take the nomination away.
Incredible. What portion of voters have already voted with absentee balloting and the rest? Do we have a sense of that?
There is a decent, the numbers are sort of around 500,000 people have already sort of cast ballots for president, and sort of some chunk of that, has probably voted for Donald Trump. So people are already voting. The military and overseas are sending in ballots. People have, been standing in lines in some cases. I was in Minnesota a couple weeks ago, and people were already sort of standing in line to cast their votes. So this is already underway, and that's where it gets really dicey legally in terms of how you change course if the party put somebody else at the top of the ticket, sort of how you deal with people who have already voted and already cast ballots.
You've been reporting this. Are you hearing hot voices in the GOP even now saying he should go?
That seems to subside, particularly after last night. I mean, there is a sense that Trump did not fully collapse. This was in a full-scale mode on Sunday. You're sensing a little bit more that the party's going to have to stick with Trump and turn their attention to those down-ballot races.
And that appears to be what they're doing right now. Matt Visor is Deputy Washington Bureau Chief for the Boston Globe, covering the campaign. Matt, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Also encourage you to follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Lots of good flow there. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.